dying, and I have to use my phone to do the interview with, so.
I understand.
Oh, are you recording too?
Just to send to the guys that I'm mentoring, because they want to hear the story too.
Oh, well, they can read it once I write it.
But they're in Florida, Scotland.
Yeah, and it goes online.
Then I'll do that. Okay, I'll cancel that.
I usually have a separate recording device, but I took the last 2 days off and it's at work. And my external charger, I left at a Super Bowl party on Sunday, so I'm kind of just hoping I'll run out of juice. I don't think I need. All right.
That's the closest outlet.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't really have. I didn't expect all those women to be there, so. We could have sat over there. So, hi.
Hello.
Because of the ambient noise in here, you'll probably have to.
Speak clearly, I promise. Enunciate.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
So, speak your full name, because I just met you as Papa Tony.
My full birth name is Anthony Jerome Lindsay. My friends call me Tony, or my public scene name in the leather community is Papa Tony. My animal name is Dancing Dragon, and my drag name is Mesculina.
Is that right? Are you a bearded drag queen? No. Because I know several of those, so.
No, leather drag is as far as I go.
Okay. All right. And what is leather drag?
Just gear, you know, geared up, you know, wearing leather for formal events, uniforms, kilts, you know.
Yeah.
Hyper-masculine gear.
Okay, gotcha. And how long have you been in San Diego?
I came here for boot camp in 1975. Okay. I was a pollution refugee. Because in the 60s and the early 70s, the San Fernando Valley was horrifying. It was like Beijing is now. We lived 3 miles from the mountains, and on a good day, we could see the mountains.
Yeah, I grew up in L.A.
Yeah, so lungs, eyes, constantly suffering. Came here for boot camp, and was standing in line for a meal outdoors, and saw the sky blue all the way down to the horizon, and the harbor gently, you know, undulating.
Yeah.
And the palm trees swaying, and I thought, I'm moving here now. So that was coincidental with me coming out right around that time, and as a gay man, and then 2 years later, I became involved in the leather community, so that's been a long time. And matter of fact, in March, it'll be 41 years.
Wow. Yeah. In the local leather community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very active.
So you were stationed here then?
Well, I was on a ship that went out and then came back and went out and came back. And then.
Yeah, I'm retired Navy, so I understand all
that. Oh, yeah. So then when I when the ship went into dry dock, and it was time for me to re-up, and I thought, I don't want to be breathing all these toxic lead paint fumes from grinding paint. I said, okay, that's enough for me. Incidentally, I was openly gay the last 2.5 years I was in. I mean, no bones about it. I was very plain.
What years were those?
This was 1975 through 1979. It was my length, the last 2.5 years. And back then, we were the new equal rights movement. Nobody knew whether it was okay to be bigoted. So I got away with a lot. And I would go on and off the ship in full leather. Mm. When we pull into port, they'd say, you know, the officer of the deck would say, where are you going, Lindsay? Never mind, I don't want to know. But there were a
what
lot
ship
of
was it?
This was the USS Samuel Gompers.
Yeah, okay.
And every...
Lots of lesbians on that ship.
Oh, yeah. Well, nowadays there are.
But back
then there were.
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, I believe you. Well, there were a lot of gay men, too. And we had our own big table where at least 40 of us would each eat every meal, you know, talking to each other and, you know, giving each other support.
Those kind of ships were the only ships that allowed women back in the late 70s, early
80s. There were support ships, yeah.
Yeah. So it was actually a big witch hunt on the Gompers probably right after you got out, because I came in 1980, And it was all over the news, and people said, well, why would you want to go in the Navy? There's all lesbians in the Navy, and there was a big story about the Gompers.
Sorry to hear that. I didn't know.
Yeah. So that's cool. What was your rating in the Navy?
I was ETR 3. I was a radar technician. And unfortunately, on the Gompers, there were 60 of us in the electronics division. So I was bottom end on the totem pole. So I swapped a lot of decks, and I waxed a lot of floors and chipped a lot of paint. So I wasn't really allowed to be near electronics, as all the young ones didn't get any chances.
Mm-hmm. So. Did you go to beef school and all that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I learned a lot, but the main thing I got from it, from a career standpoint, was diagnostics technique. I'm really good at it. My current career, after 38 years, is I'm the highest rated Apple consultant on earth. I have more 5-star ratings on Apple's website than pretty much all the rest of California combined.
So, nowadays, pretty good for an old man.
I know, and I may be forgetful and a little ditzy sometimes, but I can still fix problems nobody else can figure out. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
That's good.
So I'm grateful for my time in the Navy, and I'm really glad that I was in, but I really missed the travel more than anything else. That went away, so I just didn't see the point of staying.
Right. I was a DP, so I was involved in data processing, so I was involved in computers.
That's really early.
My whole career, yeah.
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 Vacuum tubes and Hollerith cards.
Yep. my A school was all about 80 card column key sets and collators and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
dropping containers full of cards and scattering. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And then I worked at ComNav AirPak when they first got desktop computers. So even though it was just as new to me, they assumed that I knew how to.
It's one way to get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool. So 41 years in the leather community. What did you do in the beginning? You were a young pup then, so.
So what happened?
Would you like some coffee or something?
No, for right now.
Water?
I'm full, but thank you. Well, what happened is that I was on the ship for like 2 days, mm-hmm. and this very good-looking young man comes up to me, all covered in muscles and tattoos, which was rare back then. And he comes up to me, and he says, "You and I, we got to talk up topside." I had no idea who the hell he was. I said, okay. So we went up topside. He says, "You're gay, aren't you?" And I said, "Oh, no, not me, not the kid." He says, "It's okay, I am." I went, It's the first time I've ever seen that, because the only gay guys that I've known, I wasn't fitting in, because they were all drag queens.
Right.
And I just cannot say girlfriend to save my life. And I really tried to fit in, and they'd laugh at me, because they just thought it was hilarious. So I was the only non-drag queen gay guy that I knew at that point, because it was the only one that I could only find them. Well, so then he and I never played, but he took me under his wing as a mentor. He mm-hmm. brought me over to his apartment, and he showed me a Tom of Finland book, picture book, and I was boggled. It was the first time I'd ever seen the concept that men could have sex with each other without one of them pretending to be a girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, this is for me. So I borrowed it from him.
So Whitaker, that runs those events,
I'm familiar with
him. He told me the same kind of thing, that, you know, he stayed away from being gay because he didn't want to be...
Right.
He didn't look at himself as that way.
Right. So anyway, so then he... So I borrowed the book and I photocopied the picture, my favorite pictures, because I wanted to have an outfit like that. I thought, wow, if that's attractive to me, it's got to be attractive to other guys.
Mm-hmm.
So when we pulled into Westpac, well, the stereotype was whenever you go overseas on Westpac, if you're in Japan, you're supposed to buy a camera, you know, a single-lens reflex camera and a stereo system. Whenever you pull into the Philippines, you're supposed to get mama-san and papa-san chairs.
Uh-huh.
And whenever you pull into Hong Kong, then everybody was having crushed velour leisure suits made. Well, that
you
was
had something else made.
I had something else made. I had the full-on Tom of Finland outfit. Matter of fact, I have a picture of it, if I may show you. So anyway, so then I had this made custom. So I went in to pick up the outfit in Hong Kong, and the pants were baggy. I said, no, these need to be tight. No, too tight. They will spread. I said, I don't care if they spread. You make them tight. And so then I think I got the picture here. So then I've stepped out of the place for the first time wearing my gear. And I'm wandering around Hong Kong. And I'm lost. I can't quite figure out where the heck I am. And I'm trying to find Tiger Balm, B-A-L-M, Garden. And I couldn't find it. And so then I'm standing there with the map up to my face. And I drop the map, and there's about 50 Asian people staring up straight at me because I'm 6'5" without the platform boots that I was wearing. And I was huge in all this leather, and they were all staring at me like I was a monument.
Yeah, I went to Tokyo Disneyland, and I felt tall there, and I'm only 5'6".
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so then I'm almost there. I'm still finding the pictures here. So anyway,
you can always send them to me afterwards.
Oh, I promise I will. You'll like that. Okay, I'll move on. Okay, so anyways, so then I was not looking for Filipino or Japanese hookers, so I would go to the gym, and I would look to see who was going from the steam room to the locker room to the jacuzzi to the locker room to the steam room, and then I'd meet them in the steam room, and we'd establish credentials, you know, and then I'd say, where do you go when you're in port, you know, to find the gay guys? Oh, you want to go to the Petty Officers Club on Wednesday nights. So I'd go there, and there'd be this big table where all the waitresses would avoid, except to just deliver drinks. They weren't sitting, shaking their tits in everybody's face trying to get more tips because they knew it was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And it scared a lot of the guys because I was so open. But anyway, so getting back to it. Well, I had a good time, but it wasn't until I got out of the Navy when all of a sudden everything transformed in my life. Everything. Because I was a 21-year-old man, 22, around there, and I liked playing with older men. And they liked that. Tall top, big dick, liked to fuck older guys. They liked having me around. But I used it as a trap where I wanted to get mentoring. Because I went to 12 years of Catholic school, and I knew how terribly ignorant I was about life. So then I would play with an older man, and I'd say, how could I have done that better? Or I would say, how do I deal with this issue? And they would tell me gladly. So I did this over and over and over and over again. Back in the 70s, it was the thing to do. But I had a circle of about between 30 and 40 men at any given time were my loving uncles. They took care of me. They made sure that I got my needs handled, not financially, but in terms of making sure that my questions were answered. Because I had a lot of questions. I'm the only survivor. And I mean,
I'm so sorry.
I went from a very bad beginning with a very abusive father, down the pits, up to the heights with all these wonderful men, and then down into the depths when they all died. And it wounded me horribly. But what I did that I'm really proud of is I turned all that anguish into a power source. I decided I was going to make a difference in the world, that I was going to try and bring about the end of the Holocaust phase. Because we're still stuck in it.
Can I ask a question? Did you have any survivor guilt?
All the time. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I saw myself as just a barely an egg, a fetus compared to a lot of these men that I knew. They were so kind and so wise and so worthy of living. And I just couldn't understand why, out of all those people, I never even became HIV positive. I was doing everything side by side with them.
Wow.
Just luck of the draw. So anyway, so then I really became active as a community leader.
What year was this?
1997. I first tried to be in service to other people's dreams, but they made it really plain that they didn't want that. I pulled back a bloody stump a lot.
Now, is this through back then? I mean, the bars were our place of solace, basically. So
right.
Was this happening, you know, like at Wolf's, or was this happening at the Eagle? Where were you involving, or did you find somewhere else where you were bringing people together?
I would say it not so much that way. I would say it that people had their own power structure. When it became plain that I was not welcome in that power structure, I created my own.
When you say you're not welcome in the power structure, you mean
meaning that there were people who felt that they were the elite in the leather community.
Mm-hmm.
They were the chosen. They were the only ones who deserved it. Basically, their philosophy was life is best when there's a whole bunch of bloody corpses with one or two victors. And they were mean people. And I'm a sweetie, and I have no shame about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just created my own separate power structure. I created the first to my knowledge, first website resource for the leather community online back in the mid-90s.
Okay, what was it called?
The PT website. And I still have it online.
PT?
Yeah, as in Papa Tony.
Okay.
And I actually posted a copy of it online, which is still out there. I'll send you the link. But also, I was frantic to document our history because I knew how much we'd lost. Because so many men died, their families would come in from Kansas, look at everything, go, ew, and put it all into the landfill. And it happened over and over and over and over again. And so then I was desperate. So I have photographed well over 300 title holder contests alone. I have 140,000 kink, leather, and fetish community-oriented photos on my computer.
Wow.
I have documented everything I could. Now I need to give it away to somebody.
Well, land archive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so then I just need to do it. I don't want that to get lost. So I created, what I did
they
is
would,
that I created.
They would adore that. You
oh,
know
yeah.
what I mean?
I created a, thank you, and I will. That's my commitment.
And,
soon.
Not to interrupt, but they've been doing interviews, historical interviews
right.
with people, you know, older in the community, and mm-hmm. you need to sit down for one of those.
I have done one of those myself, and I've posted mm-hmm. online, but I'll be glad to do it with them, because I like being interviewed.
Well, they video. Hi! I'm good. They video tape you and they interview and then they keep it for posterity, you know.
Right, of course. And I'm very happy to do that. Now, this is in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I need to talk to them. I really do. Thank you. I'll do that. Anyways, so then I created the first email discussion list and in San Diego in the gay community. And then I went to the Imperial Court.
What does that mean, an email discussion?
Okay, meaning for the first time in the early days of email, people could be on an email discussion list where they could contribute to a dialogue.
Okay.
And you use a listserv, listserv. You've heard of them.
Of course. I just want you to say it
right.
so I can
right.
write about it.
So then I started teaching everybody else. I taught the Bears. I taught the Imperial Court. I taught everybody I could, saying, this is good. This is a great way to stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I actually started the Leather Archives in San Diego, and then I gave it away. But I also was the leather columnist for the Gay and Lesbian Times. And what set me apart is that I would never be cruel. And the other columns in the paper at that time were cruel. People would trash each other.
Absolutely.
And I didn't last long in the job because I refused to be cruel. I would not trash anybody. I'm supportive of everybody. That's my nature. But anyway, so then what really was my biggest contribution... Okay, I had the PT list, which was the listserv. Had about a little over 3,000 people, local people, on the discussion list. So I had a big megaphone, and I would never trash anybody.
What year was this?
This was about 1998, 1999, right around then when I created it, and it really never stopped. It just kept going. But I've had a bunch of stuff since then, a lot of stuff. There was a Leatherman's Club in town called GLO, Gay Leatherman Only, and it was like a punch in the face. Very angry people in the group, and I tried it because it was the only game in town, and I thought, this sucks. So I created a separate Leatherman's group called San Diego League of Gentlemen. This was before
League
the movie.
League of Gentlemen.
This was before the movie, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought of it first. But anyway, so the San Diego League of Gentlemen, because I wanted it to be known as opposed to Gay Leatherman Only, I wanted it to be open and sweet and affectionate and hugging, gentlemen are that way. Well, that lasted for a while, but I was trying to pattern it upon other leather clubs in other cities, and San Diego's culture just wasn't really open to that. So I took some time off. I'm kind of jumping back and forth in the time stretch here, but I created another group, Fetish Men San Diego, in June of 2010, and it's still going very strong. Probably got about 20,000 followers on that.
Wow.
Worldwide.
Is that a Facebook group now, or is that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. If you look for Fetish Space Men Space San Space Diego
okay.
on Facebook, it's there. But it's the way to find out what's coming up. It really is. It's delightful, and very. Now we've hosted, as I told you, just in the last 8 years, over 800 events.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, over 900. And in that time, we have been sweet. That is the number one thing that I want to say. It's not something that most people would think of in terms of a gay Leatherman's group, but I find it to be crucial because men who are wounded and damaged by loss and by fear of intimacy and all these things that are crippling us, what we need more than anything else is to drop the threshold down to the ground. How nice are you? That's all we care about. Don't care about anything else. When I first created the group, I got challenged by a lot of people, a lot of women, saying, are you anti-female? Are you against trans women? I mean, trans men. How do you feel? And I told them, I said, we're not against anybody. If you look at our group photos, you always find at least one or two women in the pictures. And we're always sweet to them. We always treat them very respectfully and kindly. We don't snub them. I said, and they know what our theme is that we're here to heal this community that needs healing really badly. That if you, like I told you the other day, if you want to have good brothers, we need to heal. Because we want to be good brothers for our sisters. So nobody challenged. And frankly, we've been so loved ever since. We are very high esteemed.
Well, it makes sense, like you were explaining to me the other day. You know, if you can get, excuse me, a bunch of men in the same room and they feel safe and they can address these kind of issues that they're having and feel safe doing it, then they're going to be better when they're outside of that group towards other people.
Absolutely. And also, I knew that, see, we went from way too much internet, I mean, from no internet at all to way too much. And that my goal is to build a balance so that we still use it as a megaphone to say, this is coming up. But what's coming up is stuff that involves being present with each other, holding space, being able to practice your social skills, being able to flirt, being able to not have to yell at each other over a loud bar's music, to be able to just be present and nice. For instance, one of our best events is cigars and boots. Women show up for
cigars and boots or booze?
Yeah. Boots.
Okay.
It's on the patio at Red Wing every month on the first Saturday of each month from 4 to 7. And it is just peaceful.
It's just what?
Peaceful and mellow and kind. And it's like everybody's known each other for decades, even though technically they haven't, but everybody drops their shields and they're just nice. Because we all know how to be evil, angry people. And I don't want to be. I want to just be sweet. I want to be affectionate. I want to be joyful and playful. So I'm the role model for a lot of people that, yes, I'm a big, sadistic, leather, sir, daddy, master. But that's when I'm there. Now is when I get to be the huggiest guy in town. See, I don't just hug, I embrace. And I always make sure it's okay with them first. But I hold them and hold space. Like I said, that's a term we use as an elder in Mankind Project. I'm a tribal elder. And my job is to be the one with the pom-poms to encourage the young people who are rising in the community. At any given moment, I have at least a dozen young people under my wing. Right now, just before I came over here, I was picking up six times two meal tickets, meaning meal tickets for the restaurant I was at, which each one is for two meals, so that'll be something that the men and women running for Mr. and Ms. San Diego Leather will have something to add to their goodie basket. Normally they'd be doing it, but they insisted on giving it. I asked them if it would be okay if the young people would stop by. They said, oh, we'll give it to you now. Mm-hmm. So.
Have you noticed that since you've done this, that some of the other elders or men your age have realized that, you know what, I'd rather be associated with that kind of a environment than this kind of cold, distant other group?
The problem is, I mean, that other group went under a long time ago and was not replaced. What happens, I have spoken to at least 1,000 gay leathermen of my age face-to-face and given them the following talk. Where I say, I want to invite you to take on a different possibility of you becoming a loving uncle. And I say, it's a term I invented, so let me explain. The problem with men our age is that we're so busy worrying that we have to compete against the 23-year-olds. I'm still studly, I'm still valid. But the problem is that we're not owning our age. And you see a lot of them with black hair, with white roots, and they're still trying to pretend that they're Peter Pan. And I say, please own the miles that are on your odometer, that you earned the right way. Please, be nice to young people. They want to know. They want to know that we're okay. I did a recording, a little over 5 hours of audio recording in two sessions, where first half I talked about what it was like during the golden years back in the 70s. The second half I talked about what it was like back in the bad old days.
Back in the what?
Bad old days when everybody was dying.
Right.
There were about 70 men in the room with me in both sessions. The average age was 28.
Wow.
Because these young guys wanted to know why we won't talk to them. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know why we're so weird. because we've got some real quirks. Individually, we got a lot of them. We've been damaged, and we're so busy saying, I'm fine," but we're not really fine.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've tried to explain to some of the younger gay men that I know, because they have no idea what you guys went through.
Oh, yeah.
And I say, think about how many friends you have right now. I said, on Facebook, just in the community, imagine 10 of them dying every couple of weeks. I said, you can't imagine what it was like back then. And you know, they don't even want, some of them don't even want to think about it.
Oh, yeah. There's so much fear that if you open up your heart even the slightest bit and all that pain comes out, then we're going to blast furnace those poor young men and alienate them more. So we'd rather save them from the pain, but that means we never talk to them. So in Fetishmen San Diego, right now, there is a ton of men of my generation who show up with their tails wagging and their eyes shining and standing shoulder to shoulder to be supportive of the young men that show up for our events. And those young men, I call them pampered poodles. And that's a compliment.
I like that.
Because they're just strutting around and they know that they're the best because we've been telling them so. And they're working hard to make this a better community. And we're there with the pom-poms going, yay, yay. So we don't have to compete against them. We don't have to be the guy with the football, but we can be the fans. We can even be the coaches if they ask for help. And that's the role that I invented that seems to work.
And you kind of, you realized that you needed that way back when, and you're just kind of giving back.
Absolutely. And I want to see what I tell these young people that I mentor. I'm going to be, anyways, what I tell them is I say, everybody has a price. Nobody does anything for free. I'm not any different from anybody else. I want my payoff. And the payoff is someday when you're old and you got gray in your hair and in your beard, turn around and help the next one. That's what I want. I said the worst thing that happened when everybody died is that the cycle of mentoring between the generations broke. And I want it back. And it may take longer than any of us are alive for it to finally get back in shape. But it's got to start somewhere.
Right.
So that's what I do.
What was your column in GLT called?
It's been so long, I'm trying to remember. But it was, like I said, the time to look for it was around 1999, was when I was really in my prime. I'm wearing a tank top that
they don't have it online. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, it makes me look like I'm wearing a wrestling singlet, and all the wrestling fanatics would constantly say, hey, hubba hubba, you want to wrestle? But anyway, so I still have a picture from those days somewhere.
So when's Leather Pride coming up?
That is early March. I can send you the actual information.
Okay.
Then 1 week later is Los Angeles Leather Pride. Oh, here I am telling you all this stuff, and I didn't tell you the most important thing. But I need to pee really bad, so can I rush?
Of course.
Okay, which way?
It's there. Back there.
Okay, I'm right back.
Behind, go to the right, and just go behind that. Straight back. Left. Oh.
Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no problem.
Okay. The biggest thing that I did in the community, other than hosting many thousands of events, really truly thousands, I've hosted at least 250 dance parties. I never get paid a penny for any of it, none of it. But so many events from so many different places, so many different groups. But the number one thing that I'm most proud of is that I invented leather pride. There are a lot of people that say, oh no, you couldn't have, but I did. What happened was that we were being attacked in a lot of places, the leather community was. They didn't want us in the pride parade, those filthy drag queens and those disgusting leather men. They shouldn't be part of this. They get all the TV time and ignore all the real people. You remember those days. And we got so much flack, but also the center. I love the center. The problem is that every year the board of directors change and there's always one anti-leather bigot in the crowd. We've been driven away from the center so many times. I used to be so angry about it that I felt like spray painting where it says Lesbian and Gay Community Center, I'd say except leather. Because we just kept getting punished for shit, you know, that we didn't deserve.
What time period was this?
This was, God, from back in the 90s until now. Still have trouble. I mean, people are always watching us. Like if we had a meeting at the center, we were forbidden to distribute any kind of flyers because what if somebody dropped one and a child should find it? Oh! Or at one of the Mr. San Diego Leather contests that were there, two guys were caught having sex in the bathroom and we were banished forever at that time. And so then I have talked to, forget her name, at the head of the center now.
She's Dolores?
Who?
Dolores?
Yeah, the best. She absolutely calmed me down on this whole topic, so I do not want to give any impression that it's bad. It just, we're still wary. And it's not her fault. She's been super welcoming. But I've been trying to get everybody together so we can get over it, but they haven't. She's been the only one cooperating. Anyways.
She's so leaving soon.
Say it again?
And she's leaving soon.
Yeah. And then we got to start all over again. But anyway, so then we were getting hassled, and I got tired of it. And I thought, we have so much going on with the bars that back then there were still plenty of bars, that businesses, affinity groups, leaders, mentors, volunteers, artists and
artisans. No more coffee, just water.
Artists and artisans, that we had so many of them in our community. Let's celebrate them. Let's celebrate what we have. And so then the first year that we did that, three folks came down from Palm Springs because they were curious. They'd heard about it. A lot of people were following the PT list. They came down and they said, would you help us do this too? I said, sure. So the next year...
The first year was?
For Palm Springs Leather Pride.
For San Diego.
Oh, San Diego was 98.
And so theirs was 99 then, probably.
Yeah. And then LA was 2000. And then I spent every year traveling to these cities, volunteering, helping them, being the philosophical leader. If I was giving a talk in a room for 40 people seated, there'd be 200 people jammed in like sardines because they wanted to hear. Because, now this is going to sound like bragging, but this is part of the story. When I went up to Palm Springs in 98, because they saw our Leather Pride, well, they said, would you come to Pride and be part of a panel, five-person panel on the future of the gay community? I said, sure.
At their regular Pride.
Yeah, regular Pride.
Which back then was very minuscule.
Yeah.
I used to go.
Yeah. But they had this talk in an auditorium for 700 people. It was full.
Wow.
Yeah, it was surprising. We were surprised where everybody came from.
I went to their Pride, and there was never anybody there.
I remember. But for whatever reason. But so then there were five of us that were on the panel, and the goal was that first person talked 5 minutes, second person, each one of us 5 minutes. Then, I was the fifth person. I was supposed to sit down, and we were all going to open up the discussion to the crowd. Mm-hmm. I did my 5 minutes, and the crowd and the other panelists said, no, keep going. So I talked for 2.5 hours without notes, and I spoke about the overarching premise was we cannot talk about the future unless we acknowledge the past. We're still pretending it didn't happen. I'm fine. I'm maintaining. But the fact of the matter is we haven't grieved. And so while I'm doing this talk, I could make everybody in the crowd cry at the same time. 5 minutes later, huge hearty belly laughs. And I was just carrying them in the palm of my hand and I would try and say, okay, pee break. And people say, no, keep going. Mm-hmm. And within a month, every gay newspaper in all of Southern California had taken a subset of my talk and expanded upon it. It became a new dialogue, a new conversation. I was talking, at length, but I've been brooding about this stuff. I'm a philosopher. Mm-hmm. It's what I do. I had never owned it until that moment. And I realized when I was driving home, I thought, I really, really ran that whole thing with such ease. I thought, I'm going to use my powers for good and not for evil. Because I'd have a lot of power if I chose to go in a bad direction. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. So what I've done is I've never charged a penny for anything that I've ever done. And as a matter of fact, I've lost a lot of money over the years. Travel, you know, on my own dime and various other things. But the point is that Leather Pride, I taught cities, Long Beach, Palm Springs, Vegas, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, Inland Empire, in San Diego, but the ones that only lasted and really sustained were San Diego and Palm Springs and Los Angeles. Just as a sidebar, this last Palm Springs Leather Pride, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if 10,000 people showed up.
Was it the same weekend as their regular Pride?
No, the regular Pride has been begging them to come back, because back in the old days there was division, we don't want you. Well, now they're like, we want you, but the folks running it say, no, we don't want it. It's always Halloween weekend.
Okay. Anyway. The weekend before, basically.
Yeah. And oh my God, it was so crowded this last time. It was just nuts. It was crazy. Anyways, so I like to think that I started the pebbles rolling that turned into the avalanches in these other cities. And I'm glad. That's a good thing. Though they've been debating. Some of the new young pups have been saying, oh, you didn't really do that.
Yeah. How do they know if they weren't there?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, they listen to gossip or whatever. Mm-hmm. People who are jealous or whatever. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know my legacy. So speaking of legacy, my website, let me see if I can find it. I mean, I've already forgotten, but I'll send you the link. But I have a specific page. I have a blog, and I have a Tumblr site. And what I do is that I write, and I take video, and I do instructional videos, and I do audio, and I post all the new stuff. And then immediately, this big spike in readership, because I watch Google Analytics. Do you use that? Yeah. And then I get fan mail. But the ones who really touch me, the ones that reach out from Denmark or from wherever, they're saying, this is the first time I've found somebody who speaks my language. I'll have them take the Myers-Briggs personality test, and they're rare, perceptive people. So am I. So those are the people that I add to my online discussion where we can all mentor each other. It's a safe space where we can talk about stuff that matters. Yes, technically it's a kinky group, but we talk about a lot of things that have to do with heart, that have to do with social graces, that have to do with relationships, because that's part of being a grown-up. You know, you can't... My premise is that it takes a village to really help somebody. You know, just one mentor is not enough, but there's so few that claim that. But I tell all the folks on the discussion, I say, imagine yourself wearing an invisible shirt that says mentor on the front. If you have an answer, contribute, you know, just the best you can, because who knows, you may make all the difference. But so my main focus is teaching DOMs, dominant people, dominant kinky people, masters, sirs, madams, dominants. The reason why is that somebody did a statistical study about 20, 25 years ago, a real statistical study, and they found that a submissive man who wanted to be collared and in service to and in relationship with a high-quality sir had less than a 4% chance. That means 96% never get a chance. My work has been to try and bring that back into balance. The problem is that the people who knew the most were the first ones to die, and they were not replaced. The only reason why I know all this stuff that I do is because I was grabbing as much as I could while the getting was good. Mm-hmm. But I'm far rarer than a snow leopard.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things did you gather from them that you are passing on today?
A lot of things to do with success in social circumstances, seduction, preparation. Matter of fact, I'll go deeper into it. When somebody asks me, what on earth can you be teaching a top? I look at them and I say, you realize there's more than porn, right?
Yeah.
Because porn is a terrible role model, the worst. Mm-hmm. It's frightening how bad it is.
Yeah.
Because you try and do what they do on porn, ow, get away from me.
Yeah.
And you think, what did I do wrong? I thought I was doing it right. They don't show anything to do with preparation, seduction, before care, during care, after care. They don't have anything to do with education. Mm-hmm. They don't say, you're going to hurt your wrist if you do it that way. Try this instead.
They Lester don't. Lester and AJ were telling me that the 50 Shades movie, they said the positive thing about it was that it made people who are interested actually come forward.
Right.
Who would never have done it before.
I agree. And there's a negative side to that exact same point, which is that, say, Club X here in town, they're overwhelmed because there's so many newbies. See, back in the old days, being kinky was criminal, really criminal, hardcore. We only had each other for support, so we had to take care of each other, had to have each other's back. We had to warn each other about bad actors, but also to reward the virtuous ones. Say, oh, you'd like him. Okay, that's fine. When it became more common because of the internet, because anybody can look stuff up now, the problem is that we're drowning in information. We don't need more information. It's a fire hose. What we need is wisdom from someone who knows what the hell they're doing and who cares about your well-being and gives it to you with love. That's what we're lacking. 50 Shades of Grey was the fastest selling paperback book in the history of the world. That means that people are not against us, they want to be us. The problem is, again, is that there's so many newbies showing up with their tails wagging and their eyes bright, but nobody knows how to mentor all those people. And they try their best, but there's a big changeover because people get discouraged and drop away, and it's not anybody's fault. It's just so many people are interested. What I do, my technique that works really well for the events that I used to host, I'm retired now. I'm just the guy with the pom-poms. But every single event, every
single... Just the guy with the what?
Pom-poms. I'm there to support the young people.
Right.
Well, my technique that worked amazingly well, and I still do it for the club, is that I'm the greeter. I'm the Julie the Cruise director. I look for the shy ones, the uncertain ones, the new ones. And I go up to them and I welcome them warmly. I say, do you mind if I give you the brief welcoming message? Okay, knock yourself out. And I say, I want you to fit in. I want you to feel good here. I want you to get friends here. Notice how happy everybody is. Mm-hmm. You have just as much right to be happy as they do. We are not an elite group where there is the worthy ones over there in the corner and everyone else infesting the wrong planet. We don't have that. What we have instead is a tribe. In a tribe, everyone has value. Everyone brings what they have, and everybody creates something together. Okay? That's different. Not many people have ever heard that before, but that works for us because the tools that are missing from my toolbox are supplemented by the ones in yours and vice versa. And that together, if we're cooperating instead of competing, which is what the whole world is telling us, see, if you look on TV, it's all, you know, Tragedy Island and, you know, Conflict Kitchen or whatever. It's all conflict. It's all competition. We're cooperative. We're tribal. And so just, I say, it's okay to be shy. It's normal. You're going to gather information. You don't want to be a geek or a nerd. You want to fit in nicely. That's fine. But I promise you, if you take a chance, we're going to be there to applaud. We're not here to pick on you. We're not judging you from a distance going, oh, what's wrong with him? We'll give you a chance, a bunch of chances. So come be part of it. Not everybody's key to that. Not everybody's into that. But it's okay. The ones who are always land on soft cushions instead of broken glass. Mm-hmm. Can you tell I've talked about this?
Mm-hmm.
So, unquotable.
What are the... You just mentioned the club that you're still associated with.
Fetish Room San Diego.
Oh, that one. Okay,
yeah.
So how often do you...
I created that for...
How do you meet?
Well, what we do, we use the internet only as a bullhorn to say, meeting's coming up. Everybody's welcome. The people who show up, show up. Here's why. We live in the age of distraction. Everything is distraction.
Of course.
Texting, spam, Facebook, and all that. So we're just overwhelmed. But the goal for the group, as far as our online presence is that if we promise something, you can take that to the bank. That if you show up, we'll be there. We aren't going to just say, oh, we forgot to do it. We'll be there. We're always living by our word. It's all credibility and integrity based. Well, so then, if people feel like going, they go. If they don't, they don't. We don't have membership fees. We don't have membership. It's an invitation. Invitations can be accepted, denied, or renegotiated, and we don't care which choice they make. And if they show up, they're warmly welcomed, and everybody's together.
You have people that are sober and people
totally.
That are...
Totally. So funny you should say that. We used to have men's discussions every Wednesday. then we had the meeting space. But unfortunately, being a kinky group, after a short time, people say, never mind, we need that space for something else. It's a real problem finding consistent meeting spaces.
I thought the place on...
Pleasures and Treasures?
Yeah.
We're forbidden to ever meet there.
Oh.
Yeah, the owner of the place blew up at me because he was being a bully.
Oh.
And I challenged him. He said, that's it, you're blocked forever. Then about a month later, he says, we don't have room for Fetishman San Diego anymore.
Sorry to hear that.
It's a really stupid thing to do because I promoted his business back when it was just starting. It wouldn't have gotten off of the ground without me. I advertised them for free in the massive newsletter 238 times. You'd think they would be a little smarter. I brought in fresh faces every week into a business that needed new business. But it was a stupid thing to do. So many people have approached him and he just gets all ferocious. No, never. Oh, well. We've been doing okay.
So I apologize. So we got off track there. I was asking about the sober community.
Oh, yes. So in these weekly discussions, I'll show you a picture. We would meet every week, and we'd get usually between 35 and 40, 50 men every week. Every week. And it was peaceful, and it was sweet. And we didn't just talk about kinky stuff. We would talk about things like, what are the pivot points in your life?
That's a great picture.
It is. And...
I'll
make sure you get it.
If I'm able.
I'll get it to you. But anyways, the nickname for these weekly meetings was AA without the AAA. At least 40% of the men in the room would always be in sober. And we intentionally created events that were not at bars.
And can I clarify that again? AA without the...
Without the AA. Meaning that we had all the benefits of being a safe space without... going on about alcohol or meth or whatever.
But it's still attracted.
Oh, very attractive. Okay. Yeah, they
loved
it.
But it still attracted the sober.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They really liked it because we didn't make it hard for them. We made it very easy. You know, and anyways. So then when I created Fetishman San Diego, I had been president of one club or another. I used to collect old cars since 1981. And I stepped away from San Diego League of Gentlemen when it kind of went under. And
is
I thought,
it still around? It's not
no,
around
it's long
anymore.
Gone. Okay. But I thought, what can we learn? The reason why it fell apart is because it's not modern. Everything's changed. Now we've got the internet. What do we do about that? How can we create a thriving group that doesn't have all the old stuff? The old stuff had bylaws and secretaries and dues and newsletters and all this other stuff. And it just wasn't working. Because, as I said, we live in the age of distraction. Somebody gets bored, they click on a link, poof, off they go. How do we deal with that? So then I thought, I'm going to create this absolutely brand new from scratch. And honestly, truly, a large amount of the affinity groups in San Diego since 2000 have changed to match what I did with Fetishman in San Diego. Because when we first started, I mean, it grew like that. I mean, huge, right away. And I'd noticed that there are people in the group at an event who are neither... gay, nor kinky, nor male. I thought, you know, all the different variations of people were there. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? And I was always nice, but I was puzzled. And then I realized, I imagined them wearing white lab coats and carrying clipboards because they were trying to figure out why we were booming when they weren't. Why was this so popular? And I would gladly explain to them, this old way doesn't work anymore. Here's a way to get around it. See, what I am, what my specialty is, there's one old guy in our community, lives up in L.A., I think, Guy Baldwin. Very esteemed, very wise old man. I've been friends with him for decades, but he's just a curmudgeon. He's really good at pointing out problems. I'm good at solutions. That's what I do. I'm very good at finding out the best possible, easiest, most... It's my nature. It's my... I can't
do it that way. That's what you do for your job.
Yeah, exactly. So that when I write, I only write when I have something passionate to write about. It's all solutions-based. So people love that. And so then, I don't know how else to say it, but so I've posted over 2,000 articles online, really. I mean, that's when I was counting back like 3 years ago. I've only been posting since. And I don't repeat myself ever intentionally. But, you know, I may reuse a phrase, but not the whole concept. I always do a new topic.
Well, you've always got new readers, so
oh, yeah?
Right.
So my legacy as it is right now is one particular webpage. I just add to it. I don't just create new web pages for this. I'll do other pages, but then link to it on this one. This is the master page. And what its goal is to be for mentoring. And that's what people use it for. Big traffic coming through there. Because I'll talk about community. I'll talk about kinky toys. By the way, I found out from a friend of mine that if you Google the phrase Flogger review, I'm right at the top of the line. Yeah, because I do reviews. People send me their toys for evaluation. I say it's kind of out of balance. You know, it doesn't quite fit right, and it needs this. And so they'll change it, and they'll sell a bunch of them. You know, so I do that kind of stuff, and I don't charge anything for anything. But I love to help people. But
when did you first get? When did Papa Tony come along?
98. That was when I really, really kicked in hard. No, 97 actually. And that's the reason why I chose Papa Tony. Is that
I chose it.
No. All my mentors died before that could happen. I wanted to really badly, but then it all went wrong. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I chose it is because I wanted to be known as the affectionate kind of dog. The affectionate, huggy, accepting, and open-hearted kind of top. But, you know, I mean, I have slaves. I'm a slave-owning master. And we get seriously hardcore kinky when it's time, but not very often. But when we do, it goes deep. But to everyone else, I'm absolutely the kind, sweet, affectionate grandpa. That's my role.
I see you have a ring on your wedding finger. Are you married?
I've been with my husband 27 and a half years.
Wow, that's awesome.
We got married the first time 26 and a half years ago, before it was trendy or legal. We got married in front of friends and family out at Highway 5 and SeaWorld Drive, where they fly the kites. Mm-hmm. And
the family, first time?
The first time. Yeah. We've been married four times.
Wow.
Second time was at the 1993 March on Washington, when they had the big mass wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Third time, technically, was
Robin Tyler, who produced it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell her she did a good job.
Okay.
Because actually, our picture was out on the wire and went everywhere on Earth. From that March on Washington. Mm-hmm. Let me see where I've got that. I've got that. Anyway, so then third time wasn't technically a wedding, but, you know, we can bend it. It was when legal domestic partnerships came in, and we went to the local UPS store and had it notarized. Mm-hmm. And, oh, we felt so good about that.
I'm sure. That was
exciting. It was so exciting.
It was the first time we could have a legal piece of paper.
That's right. And as soon as that that certificate so pretty came out, I went over to his, Dennis is the webmaster for the San Diego Zoo. So I went over to the HR department.
Your husband's name, Dennis?
Yeah, Dennis. Everyone calls him sweetheart. Anyways, so I slapped this, I mean, no, actually I think he did, but we slapped the certificate on the desk of the HR department, said, "Where's Tony's health benefits?" I really want to find that picture for you. It's so pretty. It's one
of the list of the things that you promised me.
I know. So anyway, so then picture of us getting married.
And then you got married when it became really legal?
Yeah, but we waited. See, this was us at the March on Washington. Look what I did to the side. I found a piece of chalk. So this is actually...
That's adorable.
So this is from the Associated Press, and that was on the front page of a lot of newspapers. Anyways, so... We waited at least a week after it became legal.
The first time or the second time?
Fourth time.
No, I mean, when it became legal the first time?
First time.
Before Prop 8?
And so then we were talking about it, and I said, you know, there isn't anything that could make me even feel 1% more married than I already do. But let's go force a government official to acknowledge us. So we went and got married with our son and with a photographer at downtown. And boy, that the judge who officiated did not want to do it. She hated it. But I just kind of, glee, I was fine with it. You know, go ahead and eat your liver. We win, you don't.
Yeah.
You know. So, yes. So
So that was during the 8 months that it, or 6 months that it was legal the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. So we're very married. And Dennis is not kinky or leather whatsoever.
Wow,
and he adores my slaves. He loves my slaves.
It's very interesting, though, to be able to have such a long-term relationship with two, like, polar opposite and far that as far as that way.
Well, let's just say it this way. I'm intense. You may have noticed. I wear people out. Dennis gets as much of me as he can handle. He says, "Go play, go play." He's living with me.
How did you meet him?
We were at the gym, and I was up on the second level running track at the gym down here at. Used to be Bally's before that, it was something else. But suddenly I saw this really good-looking guy.
Hi, David.
And I thought, wow, he looks straight. But suddenly later on, this is part of the story. My parents had both died about a year earlier. And I'd grieved and grieved and grieved. And then that same morning, I decided, I am so tired of hiding my light under a bushel basket. I'm going to be happy today. I'm going to be a blessing in the world. And that's when I met him. But the way I met him is that opened myself up to possibility, and it all came together. So then I'm in the locker room, chatting with all my friends. They were so glad to see me happy again. They got a big crowd around me. And suddenly I see this cute redhead walk in that I'd seen earlier. And suddenly I was talking to the guys, and I thought, I don't want to miss this opportunity. I said, I feel like meeting someone new. How about you? And then I wouldn't let go of his hand. Not like not in a creepy way, but just kept holding it.
No, I mean, the other night we were holding hands, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, just to share it. And he wasn't pulling away. And so then I said, well, I'm just heading off to the steam room. So am I. He'd already been, but he thought, I better check this out. So we went into the steam room, and yes, we established we were both gay. And then we just kept dating. And he had to really chase me. He had to really work hard. Not because he wasn't wonderful, but because I was so damaged. I was going through 2 or 3 funerals a week for a long time. And I was terrified of investing. Because each time I'd invest in somebody, either they would die in my arms, or they would go off to Kansas and I'd never see them again while they died with their family. Mm-hmm. It was awful.
I can imagine.
One of the things that I talked about on that documentary back in the old days, before we knew what it was causing it, the biggest problem that I saw was that no one would touch the people that were dying. The old joke from those days is, what does a homosexual with grid eat? Pancakes and bologna slices, because that's the only thing that fits underneath the hospital door. And I was defiant. I was not going to let those men die alone. So I would go into their hospital room, and no one else would. I didn't even know them. And I would just hold them and say, it's okay. We can let go. It's okay. You've been a blessing in the world. And I had no idea whether I was going to get it or not, but I didn't care. I was not going to let them die alone and untouched. And so many friends that I had, they'd get a cough, and 3 weeks later, they'd be dead. It was like that over and over and over again. I imagine that's what a lot like war is like. And so I was terrified of doing any more investing. And so Dennis had to chase me for months, as wonderful as he was. I just was terrified, you know, and I was in a terribly toxic relationship, an abusive relationship, but I didn't dare step out of it because I was the world was scary. But he wore me down. I'm so glad he did. Because we're 27 and a half years later, we're like butterflies fluttering around each other with love. We constantly kiss, we constantly hold hands everywhere. When we go out for dinner, we're holding hands. And whatever table we sit at becomes the lovebird table. And we're sweet, and we're affectionate, and we don't fight. You know, we know what each other's like. We don't try to change each other. We just love each other the way they are. So Dennis has a little bit of a struggle being able to tell if he can trust people versus with me. Imagine me wearing a helmet. The helmet has horns, but they're actually prehistoric moose antlers. That's how big my antennas are. I can tell. I can set up trust and commonality with anybody like that. Mm-hmm. I have really good empathy, I mean, beyond belief. And so he knows after all these years that if I bring somebody home to meet him, their solid goal. That there is, doesn't have to worry that they're going to betray a trust or be a problem. They're always solid going people, because I can tell. The way I can tell is I'll be talking to somebody, and they'll be perking up at certain points in my talk, and I go, and I'll start focusing and zeroing in and realizing, holy crap, this one's solid gold. This one's a blessing. And a lot of times I'll take them under my wing. In the leather community, what we've been needing more than anything else, you're talking about naming myself. What I do as a tribal elder is that I name others. Is that I, if someone rises...
That's why you said earlier all the men were gone, and yeah. So they didn't name you.
Right? So I've been taking that on. So that what I do with all these wonderful people that I take under my wing is that I... Is that I'll have ceremonies where I'll gather lots of people. There's one coming up during San Diego Leather Pride, where I'm going to be gathering over at DeMille's on the patio, and I'm going to be giving a master's cap to a young man who absolutely has earned it.
That's awesome.
And I can just flip through the pages, but what I do is that I use my status in the community to help others. See, I'm really privileged. I'm white, I'm male, I'm tall, I'm cisgender, I'm charismatic. I got all that. But I promise you, ever since I came out as a gay man, I've used my privileges to help others who are not privileged. For instance, I have never stopped coming out since 1975, even with my clients, even when it wasn't necessarily safe. But I was damned if I was going to be quiet. And I always did it from love, always from, I've got some good news to share with you. Would you like to see a picture of my dogs? By the way, there's a picture of my, that's my husband. Been together 26 and a half, 24 years, whatever the length was. But I always tell them, you know, and nowadays all I get is positive affirmations. It's here in San Diego County. Who knows how it'd be somewhere else, but
What's the name of this event that you put on at the during Leather Pride?
Well, it depends. Technically, it's called a covering, C-O-V-E-R-I-N-G, okay. Event. Mm-hmm. They're hoping that I'm going to do another one of these. That is, I invented an entirely new kit. Is called the Flog Swarm, S-W-A-R-M, and it's a place where the same vibe as puppies in a pile, or three-year-olds playing naked in the mud puddle together,
mm-hmm.
It is a place for us all to do a fun, cooperative, playful scene where we all come up with ideas and the rest of us make those ideas happen. Hey, let's do this. Okay, and we'll all just do it. So it lasts for hours and hours, and it's always cooperative and always kind. But something I have done many. Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, another
covering ceremony. And here's another one. And what I'll do is that it isn't always a cover. Sometimes I will give them, if I've been teaching them how to use a particular kinky toy, let's say a flogger, and they've really applied themselves, and they've learned the safety, they've learned how to connect, how to calibrate, all that stuff, so it's always a joy. Then I'll say, I'll have loaned them my flogger, and I'll say, come to the next event and bring the flogger. So they'll bring it, and I'll call them up, I'll hand them the flogger and say, this is my token of esteem. You have clearly mastered it perfectly, and I'm proud of you. This is yours to keep. And they stand so much taller, puff their chests out that much more, knowing that, you know, the man with all that status just gave them some. And where the status came from, not from my word, well, not from my say-so, but from, I always keep my word. If I say something's going to happen, you can take that to the bank. If I say I'll be there on time and I'm not forgetful, I mean, I was there right on time. Where's she? But anyways, but all those years of credibility that have built up, and you got to keep doing it every day, when I give it away with both hands to someone else, their status rises, because if I say, this is what I've learned about this person, this man or this woman, this is the kind of character and courage I see in them. This is, they lead with their big, beautiful heart. They're true. I've never seen them betray a trust or break their word. I've seen them be absolutely the kind of admirable, lovable, respectable, and honorable person that I would love to have in my life every day. Well, as soon as I say that, it's true for every other person here saying, that must be so. And from then on, that person never has to claw their way up an ice cliff of indifference. Mm-hmm. It's always, they're settled. They're done.
So when they get the
The cover ceremony is very similar to that.
Very similar.
How do you choose who gets to be covered?
Okay.
There's only one person at each ceremony?
I had two, but one of them dropped out briefly. So and when he comes back, then we'll talk about it. But, you know, he didn't feel that he was ready to go through the process. The process lasts usually about 9 months. But it always starts with someone asking me. They have to ask. I don't just hand them out like candy. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to mean something. It has to have emotional freight. And so then what I'll do is that I'll be mentoring somebody, and they say, I really like that for myself, because they'll see the pictures. I say, I accept that. What I do is that I give them extra helpings. With some of them, I'll spend 800 hours. Others, 1,200 hours of very careful, very conscious, very focused mentoring. Where I'll teach them about social graces, about you know, how to deal with when things go wrong, and how it speaks for your character, and how you respond. Where I'll talk about all these things that I've learned from the old days, but they're not a restriction. I don't have any interest in old guard. That's what makes me kind of anathema to a lot of people, because I was there, and we didn't have all those restrictions. Maybe somebody else did, but I never met them. I'm a flexible person. I'm not rigid. I'm not going to give a submissive 36 pages of protocols that must be adhered to, because I'm Gandalf. I make stuff up on the moment, and it always works. So I don't need that. Anyway, so getting back to it. So in the process, they keep getting better and better and better and taking chances. That's key. They have to be willing to take chances. I don't want them to become me. I have no interest in making them step into a box shape like me. The words I never use is should or ought to. Because that presupposes that I know what their destiny should be, and I'm not that guy. They have their own magic. They have their own majesty and their own worth. That's what I want to bring into the world, not a clone of me. So that when I work somebody through the processes and get them to that point, and I say, okay, your final, you know, exam is coming up on this particular day. I'm not going to make it easy for you. I'm not going to go into much detail because I like to keep some mystery to it. But by the time I'm done with them, they know they've really, truly earned all of it.
When they get the cover, what do they become?
I confer with them beforehand and I say, what honorific do you prefer? Let's say one of those pictures I showed you was of Mr. Timothy. He called himself Mr. because he did not feel adequate to being called Master. By the time I was done with him, he now calls himself Master Timothy, and he has a big leather family up in San Francisco. And someone else that
it's
might
kind
be...
It's kind of like a debutante thing. Where
yes, presented.
You're becoming...
You've arrived.
Yeah.
And somebody else that might be Sir Francis. Someone else that might be, I don't know. There's a lot of different honorifics, but whatever someone... Pardon me, it feels my gills haven't grown in yet. But someone who they find their own level, and that's where I want them to be. And I encourage them to open up their mind to all possibilities. I'm very sorry about the coughing. It's really not coming up. Thank you. Much better. Thank you. So anyway, so what else would you like to ask?
Well, I kind of want to know, because we can, I'm using your story to kind of anchor the fact that Leather Pride's coming.
Yes.
So what other kind of things are you doing at Leather Pride that I can share?
Well, I'm playing phone tag with one of the female contestants running for Miss San Diego Leather. The other one I haven't been in contact yet, though I'm trying. But I spend at least 5 or 6 hours a week mentoring the male contestants, teaching them the overall picture, the context of why they're asking these questions. How to deal with your hands on stage when you don't know what to do with your hands. Just put one thumb into a front pocket and gesture with the other, you're fine. You don't look like you're standing there saying, don't kick me, don't kick me.
Right, yeah.
But giving those kind of, you know, I've been doing this for decades.
Uh-huh.
I've actually coached 13 international title holders to win. Incidentally, I was the first international leather title holder in San Diego in 10 years. I was Mr. International Cheeks and Chaps 1998, yes. It was supposed to be a butt contest. But there were 11 judges, and they were hardcore. And they made me jump through hoops like you wouldn't believe that were had to do with leadership. And the key, I'll divert for a second. There's two fun things to share about this. One, when I was on stage and they asked the silly question, because they always ask one to see how, you know, how what
how
you're,
what,
yeah, how poised you are. They said, if your butt was an animal, what would it be and why? I said, if my butt was an animal, it would be a squirrel. And I stuck because I was knew the MC had to ask. A squirrel, but why? And I said, because I can crack Brazil nuts with my ass. But when they were interviewing me, they said, one guy at the end said, what would you like to tell us that we haven't asked you about? I said, oh, that's easy. I said, I want my turn. I said, I'll explain. I said, I've been sitting back complaining about community leaders and title holders for a long time. Whine, whine, bitch, bitch, complain, complain. Who elected them? I didn't ask for them to be in charge. Blah, blah, blah. And then I finally realized, I'm 43. I know how to build teams. I know how to create events. I know how to network. I need to shut up and step up and take my turn. I said, if I do get this title, I'm not invested in it. You know, it's not. I'm not attaching my ego to this. I said, but if I win this title, I will make you proud of me every single day. And they told me that was what tipped me over the edge right there. That, and I loved being on stage. It was very fun.
What other titles do you have?
Mr. San Diego Cheeks and Chaps. No, I would have been Mr. San Diego Leather and International Mr. Leather, except I was part of the least ethical title holder contest in the history of the world.
How funny was that about Howard Dean?
How did I know this? See, the people who are the powers that be were really jealous of the fact that I kept winning everything, so they figured they had to stop me. So 4 months before the contest, they posted who the judges were, and all seven of them hated my guts. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And that's not enough. 3 days before the contest, an email was sent out to 723 people saying, tonight is an event called The Final Solution to the Tony Lindsay Problem. It was hosted by four of the seven judges. I didn't bother going. But they're trying to figure out how can we keep him from running, because they didn't want me to win. So then one of my friends chastised him and said, you took his money, you took his entry form, you got to let him run. So, anyways, so the day of the pre-contest interview, the Saturday morning, I showed up, and the other four contestants recoiled from me in fear, clutching each other in terror. I said, what's that about? They said, we were told that you'd said that if you didn't win, you were going to beat the crap out of us. And I said, brothers, that doesn't exist. It doesn't have anything to do with truth. I'm a sweet hugger. And I told him, I said, I already know I'm not going to win. I'm just here because I gave my word and I'm a man of integrity. I said, my goal is to be in service to you guys. I'm going to help you dress and change. I'm going to help make sure that you're fine. That's all I'm here for. So then they all got called in, 15 minutes, an hour and a half later, they finally called me. So I go in, and there's the judges, but off to the side is about 30 people sitting there glaring at me, like this. I said, who are they? Never mind, they're just observers. Nobody does this. This is totally unethical. So they're interviewing me and constantly snapping at me because I was not pleasing them. But they asked me, what motivates you? You have so much energy. Why are you doing this? And I said, two things, grief and rage. I said, I have this furnace of survivor's guilt and sorrow that can never be resolved in me. That gives me, I'm using that as a power source of laser of effectiveness as opposed to a cluster bomb of anguish. I don't want it to destroy me. I want it to be of service in the world. They didn't like that. So when the contest came on, you know how you're supposed to fill out the form and it says, list your contributions in the community. Use a separate sheet of paper if you want. Well, I had pages and pages because I'd done so much. They had to figure out a way around that. So the two MCs, you know, it flirted with the contestants. So, oh, show your ass. Oh, that's a hot man. That sort of stuff. And it came time for me. They said, this next contestant appears to have written a novel. The other one says, yeah, a science fiction novel. Here's Tony Lindsay. So I didn't read any part of it. So then I go up on stage, and the music goes off, and they totally ignore me. They're talking to each other. And I'm walking around. The video for this is over at the Eagle. And so I'm walking around waving at people. And they said, fine, this is great. That's enough of you. Over half the audience left before they announced the winner. They could see which way it was going. It was almost 4.5 hours, of which the contestants were on stage 6.5 minutes. They were so busy doing their thing. But anyway, so then when it came time to be announced, they said, our fourth runner-up is Tony Lindsay. They wanted to make sure that I knew that I came in last. And I didn't retaliate. I don't do that. I've never retaliated. What I did is I went home and cried. And then the next weekend was LA Leather Pride. And I went up there and I didn't talk to anybody about it, but they all knew because they were there. And they all came up and just hugged me, a big group hug and loved me. And then I went back to help them.
That's nice.
And what happened? See, this is the good news at the end of this. Because I was a gentleman and that I did not retaliate, I didn't curse them, I didn't do drama, I didn't do gossip, I became as popular as if I had won 2 international titles. I was traveling all over the country because everybody wanted me to be the the head judge or the tally master or the MC. I MC'd a lot of stuff. I have so many jokes. Oh my God. My own jokes. But so then I had this huge comedy routine that I could do when they'd be doing this fun stuff. I love doing it. But anyways, but I got more work than every previous Mr. San Diego Leather title holder combined. And that was the good side, because people saw that I was doing for the right reasons, that I was being a generous soul, that I wasn't, it wasn't about me, I was helping them every year. So anyway, so that's the funny story. I would have had, I mean, really true, I know it for a fact. Back then, I would have won International Mr. Leather, but I've never missed it. And here's why. Just before all the shit started to explode with the Mr. San Diego Leather thing, I got a call from Mr. Marcus, who is the leather columnist for the Bay Area Reporter up in San Francisco. He's also the head judge for IML every year for 25 years until he died. And he said to me, I hear you're running for Mr. San Diego Leather. I said, yeah, that's true. He said, why? I said, well, I gave my word. And he says, no, you don't understand. He says, you don't need a title. You're Papa Tony. You've transcended a title. That was very flattering and very sweet, because I needed to hear that at the time, because it was starting to explode at that time point. And I look back on this, and I'm glad to share this with you. I hope I haven't overwhelmed you. Okay. Do you have any other questions?
Maybe after I listen
you're
to
welcome
it all again.
To. You're welcome.
I think that's a great... I can't think of anything else specific.
I have a habit of overwhelming people.
I don't feel overwhelmed.
Okay.
I mean, obviously I didn't have any, I had some key points I wanted to ask about, and you know, I like organic conversations that
right.
kind of build on itself. And
So I would like to talk about Leather Pride, as
okay.
it is this year.
Okay.
San Diego Leather
Pride. On the record? Obviously.
On the record.
Okay.
San Diego Leather Pride is starting an entirely new phase with excellent people, the finest possible people who are running it. These are people of extreme kindness and integrity and honesty. I mean, integrity, but just solid, solid people who've taken over. It's been handed over to them because they wanted it so badly. And they're rebuilding what had become a very damaged brand.
Are you talking about Buster and AJ or somebody else?
Buster and AJ are the finest. They're who I'm talking about.
Okay.
And everything that you hear from them, you can take to the bank. They're good people. And I've been doing everything I can to support in, you know, different ways, because it's not my baby. I don't want to take it over. I don't want to pee all over it. I don't want to make it all about me. I'm just behind the scenes helping in different ways, picking up donations, picking up other stuff, making donations, giving coaching, stuff like that, because I want very much for this to succeed. I want their dreams to succeed, and I'll do whatever it takes, because I believe in them. That's what I wanted to say.
Oh, all right, good.
Yeah.
And do you remember what the dates are? I can look those up, I guess.
I can send those to you. Matter of
okay.
fact, I can look that up.
Do you have a graphic
right
or something?
No, I have a text that I sent somebody else that talks about that.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, the website would be a lot more informative than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what business is that you're going to complete?
All right. I'm going to make a list of the things that you promised to send me.
All right. And I'll make sure that you get them.
And I'll
be asking.
If you were a drag queen party, your name would be Crystal Ball.
A really, I don't know. You take a lot of pictures.
I do. And I've got so many
like
historical.
I would like to see a great one of you, maybe with your hat on or not.
You mean currently?
Yeah.
Oh, that's easy. If I may. Let's see if you like this one. This is recent, very, very recent. It's not this one.
Oh my God, I think that's
I do performance art.
That might be hard to...
No, it's not for it. I'm just showing it because I saw
it. Yeah.
But no, this is what I'm more interested in. Go down to the bottom. I do a lot of pictures. And here we go.
Thank you, sweet Courtney.
You're welcome, honey. That's
oh my good. God.
Let me see. Oh, does it turn sideways?
No, I can turn that off.
Is there one of...
Just me?
Well, just...
I've got so many.
Not
so obscure.
Maybe you and some people, but not somebody pecking on your neck?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's lots. Yeah, I constantly have new stuff coming through all the time. Some of it even...
a little blurry for... Whoops.
Yeah, it's a very small image.
Yeah. Well, I need very high resolution for...
Okay, well, I can also actually just have a portrait done. I've got a lot of photographers.
You don't have to do that.
No,
I'm sure you've got something.
I'm sure I do. But usually I'm the one behind the camera.
Right. That's why I was saying I know that you take most of the pictures, but...
Well, here's one.
That's a good one, too.
It's got a good resolution to it. I'll send it to you right now. Email or text?
Email.
Okay.
Do you have one of you not in your leather gear then, maybe?
Oh, I got tons of them. Yeah. Just send me a wish list. I can send you anything.
Okay.
But what happens with me is I can send you a blizzard of stuff. I mean... when they were doing that documentary, they wanted pictures of leather bars from the old days. I stopped at about 300 that
I
sent.
You're talking about the KPBS documentary?
Yeah. And so then... So I need to pee one more time.
Okay.
Rip. Pardon me.
Patriots coach left and went to the Lions.
Who?
Patricia.
The offensive coordinator? No, he didn't take the job.
It just said.
Oh, maybe. No, that wasn't the
said,
Lions.
It said new Lions coach, Mike Patricia, and it showed him in his Patriots gear.
No, it was Josh Richard.
Watch me.
I don't know,
Louise.
I can't get it on. Maybe you
might
have troubleshooting.
So, be aware that I gave you about 1/80th of my ready material. That was just a few highlights.
Well, I don't have time for all of it.
You don't need to. I'm just saying.
I think it was a pretty good summary.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, because I warned the folks when they were doing the documentary, when they were filming me, I said, I got enough material for at least 8 hours. You know, of documentary if you want. And they didn't believe me at first, but they did by the end.
Yeah, because, you know, transcribing usually takes twice as long.
Of course.
So.
Since I type with two fingers, it would take longer.
I don't, but sometimes I can't hear and I'll have to back up and,
right.
you know, stop and right. do it again.
Well, I thank you, and I appreciate your patience. And,
yeah, no problem.
And let's be friends.
Yeah.
Who's?
Sure. So I'll send you a... I got a lot of other stuff to do at work today. I'm a little behind now, but...
Good work.
I will try to get the email out to you and identify some of the things that we talked about that you forward me. And,
I do not lack for material as far as photos or websites or anything like that. I've got a lot. So just let me know, and you'll get more than you ever dared to dream of. Mm-hmm. I'm very connected.
Yeah, I want to get some links so I can maybe take a look at some of your stuff, too, just to kind of
get a sense of it.
Get a sense of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm, cool.
But yeah, thanks for meeting me here. And
do you need a ride?
Well, my office is down in Mission Valley, so I don't
know. I'm going back that way, too.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah.
I'm
glad to give you a ride. No rush.
Go to the bathroom, and then that would be great.
My pleasure.
Because otherwise, because the 10 bus, the reason I come here a lot is because the 10 bus picks up right here, and I go right back down to Old Town, and then right over to Mission Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go to the
This is your day off. Morgan, do you want to hear the funniest thing that we just...